We are back at it.
My responsibility is to make this place great again.
Champions of the Big 12.
This is not the 1980s OSU.
Remember, always have faith in God, but have faith in yourself, and certainly have faith in the Cowboys.
We are back at it. Welcome back to another edition of the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham, joined as always by Colby Powell. Colby, how are we doing on this Sunday, man? It is hot outside. It is probably too hot for you to be golfing, I would suspect, unless you teed off very early. How are you doing?
Doing well, yeah. I got to play some golf this week, and yeah, we're going to actually get on a plane on Wednesday and fly to the equator to get some cooler temperatures. We're going to Costa Rica, and it's supposed to be about 90 degrees there every day, so it will be much more pleasant in Costa Rica than it is in Oklahoma. So yeah, that'll be a nice little change of pace. Looking forward to that.
You'll have to give me some tips on Costa Rica. I think that's kind of, we've been trying to plan a trip there with some friends for a little bit. I think we were targeting a little later, maybe a year or so. So you have to give me kind of the rundown on what all there is to do there, where you went and all that. So that's fun. It's summer's winding down, man. School's about to start. I am dreading that. I mean, Nora, our oldest, middle school starts at like, she gets up at 6 a.m. So it's a very early start for me when school is in session. So I'm not really looking forward to that. Let me fix my camera here. I've been working through the tech here. I think I got my internet situation figured out. I've learned, Colby, I'm a very tech-savvy person. Like, I know how to use AI, the internet. I've always kind of been a little, what I would feel like, ahead of the curve of my peers. But I think I've reached that age where I'm not as tech-savvy as I once was. So I had this, like, Wi-Fi extender when we had all of our issues with you dropping out. It was clearly on my end. It wasn't anything you did. And apparently I wasn't using that extender right, because we were still having issues. You were still dropped. You dropped it like the last 10 seconds last episode. I was like, I got to figure this out. So I think I got it rolling. We're live here on YouTube. Thanks for everyone who's tuning in live and our audio listeners as well. We appreciate you as well. Before we get into anything though, Colby, so hopefully we're knocking on wood that the Wi-Fi stays intact. But before we get into Christian University Spirit and all the OSU items we have to talk about, we got a basketball game tonight, which kind of snuck up on all of us. We'll discuss that. But I can't tell you how many people texted me after our last show. So last show I discussed, I went to the UFC fights in Oklahoma City. My wife graciously hooked me up with some company tickets. It was fantastic. Really enjoyed it. But as I got there, there was this young 20-something behind us that just explosively vomited down like three rows of seats right on the aisle. We were supposed to sit right on the aisle. Unfortunately for the guy behind us, he was kind of a human shield, so we were intact. But I can't tell you how many people texted me this viral video that I think KOC05, my old employer, put out of these two fans who went to the UFC fights. And after I show this, I'll get with one of our friends, let me know who the driver was. But so many people texted me and said, was this the guy behind you? Well, let's take a look. So if you're watching on YouTube, there's a white pickup truck backing up. It takes him a little second here to get out of the car. Let me see if I can skip ahead here. I don't know if I want to. Yeah, let's skip a little ahead here. There we go. They're getting out of the car, and here's the audio.
Oh, you all right?
Yeah.
Hey, Andrew, you got a stray.
Open it up.
You got someone in the bed of your truck.
Open it up.
Are you okay?
You good?
I'm good.
You didn't want to knock on the window or nothing?
Nope.
You want to get an Uber? You got a friend you can call?
I got it. You got it. Can you open it up?
Open what up?
Oh, yeah, tailgate. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, the tailgate?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I didn't do it. You're all the way in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Thank you kindly.
Not a problem, man.
Oh, there you have it. That was not the guy that was behind me, but it wouldn't surprise me if he ended up in a similar position if he didn't get hauled away by the police. But our friend of the show, Seth Duckworth, responded to the tweet that I put that tweet out and said so many people had texted me about it. He said, the driver is Andrew Dixon. He wrestled at OU and is a pretty high-level jiu-jitsu guy. Made the world finals a few years ago. So fortunately for the fella in the back of the pickup truck, he didn't get aggro with the driver or try to fight him just in a drunken stupor, because he would have gotten tied up like a pretzel really quickly. That would have ended very poorly for him. It sounds like he got a free ride to Edmond, which for people who may be watching from somewhere else, that's not exactly a close drive. That's about 30 minutes from downtown.
Yeah, if he needed to go to Edmond, what a great way to cut out the Uber fee, right? Fall asleep in the back of a truck, and then you're good to go. Yeah, that was a very funny video. Whenever you sent it to me, I got a kick out of it. I can't imagine waking up with somebody in the back of your truck. They all handled it very well. The guys who were in the truck were nice, wanted to make sure he was okay and was able to get where he was going. And the guy was just like, yeah, we're all good. So, yeah, it was well handled by everyone involved, I thought.
Yep, definitely. So that was hilarious. Thanks to everyone that texted me about that. I just got a kick out of it every single time. It was funny how they all came in roughly the same time. Everyone kind of saw it at the same time as well. So we are – wait a second. We detected video in your stream. Uh-oh. That's why I cut the countdown short. So my music at the very back end, I got to edit that out. It goes to like the old Hard Knocks theme from HBO, and – every time that's played, the video has been taken down. So if you're watching this live, you're going to get the treat. This will be the only time this show sees the light of day, more than likely, unfortunately. But audio listeners, you're all good. But without further ado, thanks to Chris's University Spirit for sponsoring the podcast as always. All day, every day, they offer free standard shipping on orders over $75. You can find them at 244 South Knobloch Street there in Stillwater. You know where they're at. And again, football season rapidly approaching. Summer is winding down. We're going to have fall camp to break down soon. A lot of talk about the Cowboys and Drew Mestemaker coming out of Big 12 Media Days. So you're going to want to be togged up and ready for football season. You're going to want to make Boone Pickens Stadium as loud and as tough of an environment as humanly possible, which we're going to discuss as well in the show. So we appreciate Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop Cowboy shop, for sponsoring the podcast. All right, Colby. So this kind of snuck up on me. I'm sure it snuck up on a lot of people. You're not exactly expecting college basketball in late July going into early August, but that's exactly what we have. So Oklahoma State men's basketball is currently in Puerto Rico. They're getting ready for a game tonight at 7 o'clock against Puerto Rico Fuerza. Again, it's on at 7 o'clock on something called Baller TV. That's a network that typically shows, I believe, like high school hoops, AAU hoops, things like that. And Oklahoma State has partnered with them to broadcast these games. You can tune in live tonight at 7 o'clock. And then they also play Monday against the same team, Puerto Rico Fuerza. And then on Wednesday, they play the LBP All-Stars there in Puerto Rico. And it's kind of a fun trip. They get to I've been seeing some paddle boarding and things like that. So it's kind of crept up on us, Colby. Nice little trip for the Cowboys. You get to go out of the country to Puerto Rico. You're going to Costa Rica. They're not going to be too far away from you there. You know, it's a good time. And we'll have to see what the new team looks like, which we'll discuss as well.
Yeah, no doubt. This is going to be great. It definitely snuck up on me. This is just the 4 hours. This is happening tonight. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what they look like. And Coach Lutz talked about going down there. And basically these guys have been playing. They get eliminated from their playoffs. And Coach Lutz said, basically what we do is we pay more money to get those guys to stick around. So instead of playing a lot of times, you'll go over there and you'll just play whoever's in the country that is a professional, and they'll just kind of throw them all together. They'll have an actual team they're playing against. The coach of that team will coach the team. So it should be good competition, at least two out of the three games, he said, which will be tonight and tomorrow. So, yeah, Sunday, Monday, there should be some good basketball played down there. And a chance to I don't think that you're going in on July 26th hoping to learn a lot about Oklahoma State's team, but just see them in action, see the new faces, see what they look like out there together, see if anybody's shooting the ball well. Like, yeah, I'm excited to turn it on this evening and just see what it looks like. We're in a part of the sports calendar, Carson, where we are just so craved for live sports. I'm all in for Oklahoma State versus Puerto Fuerza. Like, this is going to be great. Did I say that right? Puerto Rico Fuerza. So,
Fuerza. Fuerza.
Yes. I'm all
Puerto
in
Rico on Fuerza.
July basketball. And I guess the, the NCAA allows like 10 extra practices if you have a summer foreign travel thing going on with your team. So Steve Lutz described it as Christmas in July, like just being able to get everybody together, get all these additional practices, the team bonding in Puerto Rico, like you said, out on the water and stuff, I'm sure is invaluable. Like, I think that this is an important trip, especially whenever you're bringing in so many new guys, whether that be transfers or the freshmen that are coming in. I think the team bonding, all the additional practices, I think this gives them a better chance to kind of know each other and feel good coming into the fall and hit the ground running come November.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, where I'm at with OSU basketball is it's not the same as football. I think football, I kind of know what they have with quarterback and offense and all those things that we've talked so much about. Oh, my stream health is rapidly not going well. So this clearly have some things to learn here on my tech lording. But when it comes to the basketball team, I'm in so much more of a wait and see mindset, because again, I heard all offseason last year how much better they were going to be, all this talent they got in the portal, people that follow the sport even closer than I do were just fired up, and they were terrible. Now they won more games than they won the year before under Steve Lutz. They went from 17 wins to 20. Hopefully they can get to 25 to 30 this year and keep that climbing that ladder. That's something we saw early in Mike Gundy's tenure. I think one of the hallmarks of the early Mike Gundy tenure was every single season they won more games. From his first season to like his third, fourth, fifth, you could just see him figuring it out and figuring out roster building in real time. So that's my hope, is that we see that with Steve Lutz and his basketball team. But I'm not going to come out here and say that we will. It's kind of a wait-and-see approach for me. But Jeff Goodman is one of the more prominent basketball voices in the college basketball space. He was asked about, or he brought this up about Oklahoma State. I think it's pretty interesting. Take a listen. Well, hang on a second.
All right, Goodman, the most underrated team in this conference.
I think I like Oklahoma State.
That was mine.
Yeah, geez.
I do. I just think most people are going to pick them, I don't know, towards probably the bottom of the league, or towards the bottom of the league. And already you've got the kid, Kishinat, who's eligible at this point, thanks to a judge. They got the Clary back.
Just so people know, it is currently Monday, July 13th at 11:27 a.m. Eastern time as we are recording this. And by the time this airs, that status might change 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 more times. You don't know. But as of this moment, because Kishinat is eligible, and he might be the best athlete that we have in college basketball this year. He's a freak.
Yeah, and he got a big from Georgetown, the kid. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to pronounce his last name because I butchered it last week, but I'm going to call him Orange Julius from now on, just to make sure I don't butcher it. Jordan Burks coming over from UCF. Like Latrell Allman, who we saw in the summer, and it is like a top 20-ish, I think, freshman in the country. Yeah, like I like their team, and you know, Lutz can coach, and he's finally got, I don't want to say finally, I mean, he did a great job, obviously, at the mid-major level, Texas A&M Corpus Christi, but I think he's finally got the money in Stillwater to be able to kind of compete. Like, he's probably got similar money to Kansas this year, Norm. So I think Oklahoma State's that team that people just aren't going to give enough respect to in the preseason, and I think they're going to surprise some people.
Yeah, I think they make a tournament. They really, really like Kanye Clary. They really think that he's going to have a big year this year. So I went with them as well. Norm,
there you have it. I mean, tons of positive praise there, Colby. They said a lot. There's a lot to like. And so that type of talk, like I just mentioned, like, I'm in wait and see mode, but when respected voices who cover this thing day in, day out have that level of praise, not only the praise for Kanye Clary and Allman, the recruit coming in, the McDonald's All-American, but the thing that stuck out to me most, first off, Colby, was stating that Oklahoma State has as much money as Kansas when it comes to NIL. I mean, that tells you that they've built a very expensive roster and one that you would think would lead to a lot of wins.
Yeah, and it makes sense whenever you look at the recruiting class. You get Latrell Almond in the door, the number 32 recruit in the country, according to 247. 6'8", 225, 97 overall rated, 4-star. You get Anthony Felician, 6'5", 205, 96 overall rated, 4-star. Jalen Montnotti, 6'7", 175, 90 overall rated, 4-star. And then Parker Robinson, 6'4", 200, 90 overall rated, 4-star. And one thing Steve Lutz talked about was the size on this team. You know, you're going to start Jacob Walker or Kanye Cleary at guard. That's 6 foot, 6'1". But then after that, you could be starting 6'5", 6'8", 6'10", 7 foot. Like, Oklahoma State's going to be able to put real size on the floor. And Carson, you know, Goodman talks there about Lutz, and Lutz can coach. Like, everybody who's in the know in college basketball has been telling us for years, Steve Lutz can coach. So maybe it's just a matter of, like, we really were, there was some lag in the money and the talent catching up, and now Coach Lutz is going to be able to do something. I'm optimistic. I'm in wait-and-see mode like you are, but that's a really great freshman recruiting class coming in. The transfers they brought over, the praise there for cashing that to, you know, could be one of the most athletic players in the country, if not the best athlete in the country. I think a certain Payne County judge would certainly agree with that. Shout out legal system. So I think that there's reason to be excited. We all want to be excited in the offseason, right? Like, this is the excitement part of the schedule. We're excited about football. There's clearly some talent there. Eric Morris is highly regarded. We're excited about basketball. There's clearly some talent there. Steve Lutz is highly regarded. We're excited about women's basketball. Coach Hoyt. We have to wait to see the games played, but I'm excited to tune in tonight, tomorrow, to see what these guys all look like together, because I think that we can undoubtedly say, when you look at the freshman class that has come in and then the transfers that Lutz has paired around them, like, this will be the most talent that has taken the floor for Steve Lutz coach team. As much fun as Parsifal and those guys were, this will undoubtedly be the most talented roster he's had to work with in Stillwater.
No question. And I think there's a lot of praise for Kanye Cleary. I think he really had a big kind of end to his season last year. And there's, you know, national folks right there just talking about how good he can be and how excited Steve Lutz and company are. So tune in tonight on Baller TV. Are you going to be tuning in on Baller TV tonight, Colby?
I mean, that's where I'm going. If you're looking for it, by the way, you can go to pistolsfiringblog.com, and there's a it was 4 days ago, Tyler Waldrop posted Oklahoma State hoping to use Puerto Rico trip to springboard Cowboys ahead of schedule, and there's a link down there to watch game one, game two, and game three. There's links to those in the story on pfp.com. So whether you're watching this live, if you are, great, you can go find that. Even if you're listening to it here in the next couple of days, then you can still go find that on the website, check it out. So I'm excited to see what they look like, just see what the starting five is. And again, I want to see Parker Robinson out there. Like, is he really shooting it? I want to see what Latrell Holman looks like physically. Like, he's supposed to be pretty impressive. So I am excited. Just kind of popped up out of nowhere that we're getting summer basketball. That's fun.
Yeah, your audio is sounding very robotic and staticky. Let us know in the chat if you're hearing that on my end as well. But we got hoops to talk about there. What is your opinion of Steve Lutz before we move on? Like you just mentioned it, like, he was a guy that stood out to me when, you remember, I brought his name up, I think, first of anybody. I was just looking at all the potential coaches they could go after, and his resume and mainly the coaches he worked under, like Matt Painter and on down the line, that he's been under really good coaches. And that typically leads to success. I mean, you just think of all the guys from the Eddie Sutton tree and just all the legends of the game, their coaching trees usually lead to really quality head coaches as well. So I was really excited that they ended up landing on him. And again, I think it's kind of similar to the Boynton situation, where Boynton had a lot of issues to deal with that weren't NIL related. Now Lutz is having to walk into Cashy Nat trying to fight the legal system. I think Pistols Firing wrote a really good article about that and all that entails that college basketball coaches are dealing with now. NIL roster turnover. So it's kind of hard to judge him, right? Like, it was hard to judge Boynton through all that. It's hard for me to come on here and have some, you know, 100% certain takes on the Steve Lutz era thus far. It's really difficult given all the issues, but this is the environment he's now paid to coach in. So on one hand, I understand all the different elements of his job now, but two, those elements aren't going away. So it's tough for me to say. I'll have a lot of more stronger opinions probably after this season.
Yeah, right now he just gets a grade of I for incomplete. Like, we just don't know yet. It's been so, it felt like that first season, he just tried to hit the ground running, and it was late to get in the cycle and make the best out of it in year one. And that team was fun, and that team played hard, and they won some conference games, and they maybe overachieved a little bit. This last year, we really got our hopes up. Then you dealt with a couple of injuries. You know, you have Parson miss the most of the OU game. You lose that game. It just starts to go downhill. So I think it's just a great of eye for incomplete. This season, you need to win some basketball games. You need to be a tournament team. This is year three. Like, it's time to get going. So right now, it's a grade of I for incomplete. Hopefully, after the season, we can give a grade of A, but I don't know what that looks like. To give a grade of A, is that make the tournament? Is that win a tournament game? Where does that put you in the Big 12 standings? There's context always that has to be applied once the season is completed. But, yeah, you've got to win some basketball games this year. Another 12th place, 9th place, 14th place finish in the Big 12. I don't think that's really going to cut it for the fan base this season in year three. This is time to make it happen.
Man, your audio sounds very bad.
That is very unfortunate.
Trying to work.
It makes anybody feeling better. I sound great on my end, so.
Why don't you go ahead and hit record on your end if you don't hear anything? Maybe that'll help us in the back end. Let me see here. I did want to move on. Give me 1 second. 15. So they've started to rank. I saw this ranking from USA Today on Big 12 stadiums. And Oklahoma State, of course, just came off being voted number one stadium in the country in terms of Yelp reviews. So I did find it interesting from USA Today. Let me pull up the article here. Okay. So right now we have, this is the article from USA Today, republished in the Oklahoman. And number one, Colby, I don't know about you, but I read Rice first. And I was like, do they not realize Rice is not in the Big 12? And then I kept reading and noticed it was Utah's stadium. I haven't been there yet, but I have watched it a ton on TV, as I'm sure you have, Colby. But it's hard to argue with the records. I mean, they're 47-13 at home since 2016. They're also 29-6 under the lights. But I got to say, I'm curious to see how that goes now that Kyle Whittingham has moved on to greener pastures. Their Mike Gundy is now the head coach at Michigan, so we'll have to see. But I understand the ranking here. And I can't hear Colby, so let me try to fix that.
Yeah,
you're back now.
Well, Carson can't hear me. Okay. Yeah, no, I was just saying I'm fine with Utah at one. I don't know if it's – I don't know. I could put Boone Pickens in there. If this was done after the 2021 season, even after the 2023 season, I think you'd be putting Oklahoma State at one. You do it after the 2025 season with 2 years Oklahoma State just had. Yeah, that probably feels right to have Utah at one.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I can argue as we move further down here. Let's see if I can move your mic over here so we can just talk as we go. Apologies to the audio listeners here. Let me put Colby's mic in here. There's Colby. All right. Let's see here. Number two, Lavelle Edwards Stadium, BYU, the two Utah schools. It's the biggest stadium, Colby, 63,000, which was kind of crazy when they joined the Big 12. That was the stat that jumped out at me. They had the biggest stadium right away. And I got to say, it's a good atmosphere, really good. I honestly, Colby, would probably put this number one, just the vibes, the scenery, all those things. And I understand Utah's record, but Utah holds 55, this holds 63, and these people are just, they pack the place every single game. And I do not hear Colby. That clearly did not work.
Check, check. Hello, hello.
You're back now. That didn't work.
Okay. Yeah, my
tech abilities are showing here.
You're fighting it today. You're fighting it. We're fighting it with you. I would have been fine if you flip-flopped these. I'm fine with them the way they are. These are two great stadiums. Both hard places to play, hard places to win, and both schools that have been good since they've come into the Big 12. So it is interesting that we're ranking Big 12 atmospheres, Big 12 stadiums, and the two on the top of the list are, you know, relative newcomers, not any of the old guard. So, yeah, I would have these two again. Oklahoma State has been down for the last couple of years. These two would definitely be ahead of Tech. They'd definitely be ahead of Iowa State, West Virginia, some of the other places in the Big 12 that you would think of as decent atmospheres. I think I would pretty clearly have these two spots ahead of those that I just listed. Baylor, TCU, yeah, both the Utah schools are higher than those places.
Yep, I'd agree with that. We'll just stick to here. Number three would be Colorado, Folsom Field, third highest stadium in college football at 5,360 feet. I've been to Colorado Stadium. Seeing Ralphie run the Buffalo, it's pretty sweet. And just the thing that always stood out to me, if you've been to Boulder, is when you pull into Boulder, it's like you come in off the top of this hill slash mountain, and you're looking down in this gully, and there's Boulder, and it's just right there. It's an amazing, amazing place. If you get a chance to go to Boulder for a game, I would highly recommend it. Now, the end game, the stadium itself is pretty small, pretty run down, pretty old. The fans are like shockingly unruly. They're very, very much like Texas Tech fans, if you've ever been there. It's kind of wild. I went there with friend of the show Adam Lunt to go watch our Florida State Seminoles. He grew up in Florida, big FSU fan as well, and we were wearing our FSU gear, and we were hearing it from all angles. But I would probably put Boone Pickens Stadium above this one. I'd listen to arguments for the first two. I'd put Boone Pickens over this one.
Yeah, OSU Wildman is in the comments right now on YouTube. Says, so were the rankings based on scenery? Like, it kind of feels that way now. I don't think it felt that way after the first two. You can make a good case for Utah and BYU. Colorado's not some place that everybody is just, like, scared and terrified of. I mean, we looked scared and terrified the day we went up there and played Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders, and we had one of the worst teams in the country. We looked pretty terrified that day. But that's because we had one of the worst teams in the country. What Blanket points out in the comments on YouTube, we've been so bad for so long that nobody remembers OSU but OSU. Nobody remembers Boone Pickens Stadium. Nobody remembers Bedlam. And so on. Also fair. Like, if you go, we're coming up on three calendar years in between conference wins. People kind of forget that you're a tough place to play. Like, having a good football team is part of it. I will say, like, when I think about ranking atmospheres, I always think about ranking them at their peak. So whether that's NBA stadiums, NFL stadiums, like, I think, what are we ranking these places at their peak? And Utah at its peak, BYU at its peak, I think would be up there. Boone Pickens Stadium at its peak would be right up there. Lubbock, yes, but lower than these that I just mentioned. West Virginia, yes, but lower than these that I just mentioned. Colorado at its peak, like, again, it's beautiful. But it's not the raucous, crazy atmosphere that you're getting in Stillwater, in Provo. You're just not getting that in Colorado. So I think that this is where they lost me, and now we're just going out to look at the beautiful mountains.
Yep, I would agree. And Boone Pickens Stadium is number four, and I think this is recency bias. I mean, the fact that they've lost so many games over the last 2 years, a tiny section took their shirts off and waved around their heads, getting like, the entire stadium had to move to this section just to fill it. That doesn't do well with rankings like this. But Colby, you and I both know, and I think everyone watching this show, what an atmosphere Boone Pickens Stadium has become. It has become, for my money, one of the best home field advantages in the entire country. When you factor in how close those fans are, literally hovering over the field is what it looks like. There's nowhere to run when you run out of bounds. And the fact that they've had so many wins against top 10 teams in that stadium, to me, backs up everything we see, feel, think about what an environment it is. And you combine that with the atmosphere on campus, with tailgating, all of those things. Like, for my money, Boone Pickens, I've been to a lot of stadiums around the country, and I've said this many times. I've been to Georgia, SEC tailgating, Athens, it's always voted amongst the best places to go. OSU's right there. It's very little difference. There's probably more people, but it's same vibe, same exact scenery and vibe, and it doesn't blow OSU out of the water. In fact, I'd say OSU's on par, if not a little better, with how close the bar scene is right there to campus as well. So for my money, I'd put OSU higher on this list. I would probably put BYU 1, and I would probably put Oklahoma State 2, just because of the sellouts at BYU. It's a bigger stadium. They've been doing it longer. They have a lot of built-in advantages with, you know, the Mormon church and just how bought in everyone is for that university, that are fans of that university. So can't quibble too much with the rankings. That's how I'd rank it.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I would say you've got two chances this year. If you want to really remind people what Boone Pickens Stadium looks like, you've got two chances this year to do it. When Oregon comes to town, when Texas Tech comes to town. You beat these other schools that win whenever they're here, that's great. You're not going to have a ton of national eyeballs on all of these games. You're going to have a ton of national eyeballs whenever Oregon comes to town. You're going to have a ton of national eyeballs whenever Texas Tech comes to town. You win either of those games. Doesn't have to be both, but you pull off the massive upset in either of those games, I promise that place will be going crazy, and you'll remind everybody what Boone Pickens Stadium looks like. Now, those would be upsets for a reason. Those teams are obviously going to be better than Oklahoma State. Go pull off an upset. It happens. It's college football. Go do it. Remind everybody what Boone Pickens Stadium is all about.
Yep. You got to prove it. You got to prove it on the field. So I thought that was interesting. Another interesting ranking here is so the Oklahoman, I think I believe it was Jenny Carlson. Let me pull up the article here. I don't have it handy, but she ranked all the seasons for Oklahoma State since we're now well past the last college athletic season. And she ranked just OSU's teams and based it on how successful they were. She ranked the teams, essentially. It's pretty interesting. So she has men's cross country number one. They won their second national title.
Real quick, I did have a question here. I wanted to make sure that we are on the same page as what we are ranking here. We are ranking the season that this program had, or we're ranking like the totality of basically August 1, 2025 through today.
I think we're ranking the seasons, right? Because, I mean, of course you're going to put football and basketball. I mean, I guess they played terribly, but you know what I mean. I think there's some inherent bias there if you're not judging it based on their seasons as a whole. She said,
okay,
this is Jenny Carlson from the Oklahoman. She said she's going to rank them based on – she's just ranking the programs. So I think that's actually a fair way to do it, ranking the programs where they're in their current state. Not just their seasons at hand. So I think that's a fair way to do it. And number one, I think it's hard to argue with. Men's cross country, they won their second national title in 3 years and sixth overall. Look, cross country is not a major sport. We would talk more about it if there was a ton of fan interest involved. So I think sometimes we overlook just how successful cross country has been. They've won six national titles, Colby, and two in the last 3 years. Tough to rank anyone else one over that as far as winning championships.
Yeah, it's absurd how good they've been. It's one of those things where, you know, you're one of the smaller sports. You're not going to get the coverage that football gets, the basketball gets, even baseball, golf, some of these other sports. We don't know the ins and outs of cross country the way we do these other programs, but they still deserve a massive amount of credit for what they've accomplished. They've been great. So, yeah, number one.
Yep. Wrestling number two, they finished national runner-up, as you know, with David Taylor and company. And then, of course, it was just awesome to see the guys win individual national championships, all three freshmen, Sergio Vega, Landon Robideau, and Jax Forrest. They kind of maxed it out last year. They really did max out what they had in their roster, and, of course, they have a ton of talent coming in. But the decision to take off Jax Forrest's red shirt proved to be a great one for him. He wins an individual national title. I think you could argue, should they wait and all those things to try and really push for, you know, national titles next season. But all in all, you can't. David Taylor hasn't put a foot wrong since becoming the coach. He's been an absolute smash grand slam hire.
Yeah, no doubt. Wrestling's in a great place. Pulling the red shirt of Jax Forrest was big for him, for the team success this year. I think it was also big for the fan base. You know, you already had the momentum of the Wyatt Hendrickson pin takedown moment, whatever you want to call it. And then getting the Jax Forrest stuff on the heels of that, it was just great for the wrestling fan base. Wrestling is in a great place. That's where Gallagher Iba gets rocking, is with wrestling.
Yep, absolutely. Number three, men's golf. I mean, disappointing they didn't win a national championship, but it's their 59th top five finish at Nationals. Preston Stout, of course, winning the individual national championship. That's, I guess you could argue, make the same argument I just made for wrestling, really. I mean, they kind of maxed out their, Stout wins the individual title, but I do think some other guys didn't quite step up on the stroke play, and they were forced to be on the same bracket side as Auburn. They were probably the second best team in the country, though. So I think that's obviously an amazing season, definitely worthy of number three.
Yeah, the match play determines where you finish, obviously, and they finished in that T3, T4, whatever you want to call it. But they might have been the second best team behind Auburn. Auburn was clearly heads and tails above everybody. They were better in the stroke play. They were better in the match play. They dominated everybody. Jackson Cleveland is on the verge of winning a PGA Tour event as we speak. He's got a 3-shot lead with 5 holes to play over Scotty Scheffler. So like that team was absolutely loaded. You can't win them all. Oklahoma State won it last year. It's Auburn barely made it this year. Golf's it's a fickle sport. You have good days, you have bad days, and Oklahoma State golf, he's in a great position, bringing guys back again, Preston Stout, doing his thing. So, yeah, everybody knows how we feel about the Oklahoma State men's golf program. They're a lot of fun, and I think they're going to continue to be a lot of fun because Bratton's just got it back rolling again. It's a machine. It really is. It's a machine.
Yep, he's got them rolling again, that's for sure. Let's see here. Yeah, moving on down the list, let's just hop around here. Women's golf fourth. You were really high on the women's golf program going into national championships. They advanced to match play quarterfinals. First time they had made match play in 6 years. That's kind of crazy to think about. I mean, we focus so much on the men's side with golf and how the coaches are doing and how they're recruiting and all those things. But the women's golf team had fallen off quite a bit, and they bounced back in a big way.
I think it was their first time in the postseason since they finished national runner-up to Ole Miss. That year that I just, I think it was Julie Johnson, who's on the Golf Channel now, was like heel clicking across the greens in the national championship matches. They were beating us, and I was just getting furious on a Wednesday afternoon watching women's college golf. But yeah, it was good to see them bounce back. I'm a golf guy. You're a golf guy. I've got Swing and Pete on my hat right now. I really want both of those programs to be successful year in, year out. You know, the dream is that 14, 15 years from now, I'm driving up to Stillwater to watch my daughter play. Like, that's the dream, is that Oklahoma State recruits my daughter to play golf and she's able to go up there. Who knows if she'll be that good or if she'll want that. But, yeah, that's the dream. So I root for both of those programs to be incredibly strong every single year.
Yeah, your audio sounds horrendous. Sorry to everyone that's currently watching this.
I thought it got better.
No, it's been pretty terrible throughout. Apologies to everyone that's watching live on YouTube and our audio. I hope this doesn't trickle into the audio listeners as well. But let's just go quickly down the list here. Softball 5th, women's basketball 6th, baseball 7th, equestrian, women's cross country, men's basketball T10 with men's track. Women's track, soccer, football T14, tied with men's tennis T14, and women's tennis taking up the cellar. Somehow football was not the last ranked team on these rankings. So women's tennis failed to make the postseason after they forfeited the final 5 matches of the season. Of the 9 players on the roster, 3 had long-term injuries, while another 3 became sidelined by injuries, leaving them without enough players to compete. That's a season from hell, if I've ever heard one.
Yeah, no kidding. That's brutal. That's absolutely brutal. For football to not bring up the rear, you know something went very bad somewhere else. And, yeah, that sounds awful. So, football, I still, with it being the moneymaker and everything, you could still argue that the leader failed in such an epic fashion that they should still reserve the right to last place on that list. But, yeah, I get it. So that was just a fun off-season content from Jenny Carlson. That was good stuff.
All right. Viewer question time. Thanks. Anyone who's sticking in this chat, I just am so thankful for you. You're tremendous. You love Pistols Firing Podcast, and we love you. So ask me literally anything in the chat. Ask Colby literally anything.
Ooh.
And we'll try to answer as best we can within reason. I can't answer anything. Can't give you my social
if
security
I don't
number
answer
or anything.
It. If I don't want to answer it, I can just pretend that my audio is terrible.
Well, it's pretty much what it sounds like. So,
We did have an Oklahoma State themed question up here from Cowboy CNRA 2811. Obviously, a different situation than that of Sorsby, but how do we feel about the 2 lawsuits from our basketball players seeking eligibility? Is it justified? I think under the current system and the way college sports are operating, yes. In a perfect world, we can do away with all these lawsuits and all these injunctions. The NCAA. It's just, they're having a hard time enforcing rules right now whenever state judges can come in. And we found out the other day that they're not going to vote on the big college sports bill before college football starts this season. So I think we're just going to be living in this gray area a bit longer. And it's kind of brutal to not know, for the players to not know, for the coaches to not know. And I mean, I think I said this a few weeks ago, when we get to a place in college sports where I never have to hear the word injunction again, that's going to be fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? I don't like everyone having to go to court to battle for eligibility. Like, there needs to be hard and fast rules established by somebody. And that's kind of the issue. There isn't any rules currently. And so I don't know the ins and outs of this case. I'm sure he has a good case, and I hope it works out for him. But we just now, I'm about to pull a Mike Gundy. We live in a society today that if something doesn't go your way, you lawyer up and you file something to get your way. And so for me, I don't like that. I don't like that the way things have gone with college. The college athletics that I knew, that everyone knew, are gone. This is semi-pro is what this is. And so they need to have a union for players, and the schools need to have some sort of collective bargaining agreement with the players. It's the only way this is going to work. If guys are getting paid to play, there's too much money at stake. So of course everyone's going to file lawsuits. They're preventing them from making their livelihood. So I see it both ways. I'm just kind of tired of all the court cases, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's exhausting. It's absolutely exhausting. OSU Wildman in the chat says floor and ceiling for the football team, realistically, and what would be the worst acceptable result? Like, it goes poorly, but it's an acceptable result. I mean, I think the floor is like the absolute floor. 4-8 is probably the absolute floor. I'd say a more realistic floor is probably going to be 5-7. And then I think a realistic ceiling is 10-2. Anything, and I think you're getting a little crazy in one direction or the other. Worst acceptable results, probably 6-6. You bring all this talent in and you go sub 500 in year one, and there's going to be a lot less Eric Morris excitement come year two. So I think the worst acceptable result is 6-6.
Yeah, I mean, I think you gotta, it's difficult, right? It's his first season. You want to give him some time here before you say a season's unacceptable. But on the same hand, you're bringing in the nation's leading passer. You spend all this money to bring in all your team from North Texas. If you don't have a team on par with last year's North Texas team, given all the resources you have at Oklahoma State to recruit elsewhere on the roster, 6-6 will be a pretty big disappointment. I think if you were talking in the offices of Chad Weiberg and all the boosters that are fronting a lot of money, I think 6-6 would be completely unacceptable. I would think 7-5 would be acceptable. I would think 8-4 is kind of the baseline I think they would be operating from, the people that are intricately involved. Now, for me, that's kind of where I go too. You look at the Big 12, it's not a murderer's row anymore. Like, go beat up on these programs that have never sniffed the level of success that Oklahoma State has. Eric Morris, you should hit the ground running with all the players you've acquired, especially at the key positions of quarterback and skills players. So I don't know. I think for me, unacceptable would be 6-6. 7-5, acceptable. 8-4 should be like the baseline.
Okay, yeah, I'm good with that. And I think that as we get closer to the season, I would guess that our predictions are going to stabilize somewhere around the 8-4 range. I think if we wanted to, we could get weird and call out a 10-2, but that's just, you're asking a lot of the defense, you're asking a lot of winning close games. I think we're going to settle somewhere in the 8-4 range, if I had to guess.
Yep. I like that. I think I might be settling around 9-3. I really think they're going to be good this year, based on everything I've seen and heard and all those things. And again, I'm not that impressed with the Big 12. I mean, think about this. Like, I brought this up last year, and it's worth repeating. Texas Tech became the first team in Big 12 history to win every conference game by at least 2 touchdowns. And that's a credit to the program they've built with NIL. But I think that also speaks to the quality of the Big 12 that we currently live in. OSU certainly did their part to help those metrics and numbers. But even the best teams in the Big 12 couldn't get within two touchdowns of them. And I think that really speaks to the overall quality of the league. I think it speaks to how ripe they are for the picking when it comes to Eric Morris really coming in here and surprising some people. Because I kind of think they're going to light some people up, Colby. Sure, they're going to give up points. I think we're going to see old school OSU under Mike. We're going to see Gundy ball from the early days with Dez and Zach, where you're just going to go out and outscore people. The Mason Rudolph down in Lubbock, with James Washington throwing it over their heads 10 times for, you know, 60 points. I think that's what we're going to see. And I want to see Eric Morris just run it up on people and say, oh, you think we're just going to go away? You think because we won like two games in 2 years, we're just done? That ain't going to happen. And I can't wait. I hope Eric Morris just steps on people's throats and runs the score up. And if they want to cry about it, we don't care. We don't care.
I'm so in for old school Gundy ball, beat people 47-42. I'm so in for all that. J-Rod says, if OSU shocks the world and pulls off the upset against Oregon, how much of your mind would you lose? I would say pretty much all of it. If Oklahoma State beats Oregon, I'm going to say unreasonable things on the emergency pod that we're going to have after that. I won't even pretend to be reasonable if Oklahoma State beats Oregon.
I would have to really go through the history books to find a bigger win as far as the national conversation's concerned. Have they beaten the number one team in the country on their home field? I don't think so. Have they beaten the number two or three? I don't.
What was OU ranked? What was OU ranked in 01? Was it 01?
Yeah, I mean, they were going to be in the national championship game in 01. So they were probably 1, 2, or 3 that year. That's a good call. 02, I don't believe they were as highly ranked because I think Jason White got hurt. That might have been the Nate Hibble year. So it's difficult. They beat Baylor, the big Baylor win in 2013. Baylor was up there.
That was a big win.
They might have been 6th in the country then. But no, I think that is a win. If they were to beat Oregon, that immediately vaults into one of the, if not the biggest wins in school history. There's some extra ramifications because you announced to the entire country that OSU football's back. Without doubt, without a doubt. You beat Oregon on your home field. There's no more of this talk of, well, Mike Gundy didn't do this, that, Eric Morris, we don't know much. Like, all that talk ceases, and it becomes a question, Colby, of can this team not only make the playoff, but can they make a run? Because if you beat Oregon, you can beat anybody. Now, granted, it's on your home field, but still, I think that would be worthy of everyone losing their minds.
Carson, I think a fun hypothetical is, let's just say for the sake of argument, that game's tied with 5 minutes left. Mike Gundy's sitting at home. He's watching this game on his TV. Who's he rooting for? Who's he rooting for? I mean, he's probably rooting for Oklahoma State, right? He's an Oklahoma State guy, but it doesn't look great if you go 1-11, you take selfies with their fans, they beat you 69-3, and then your predecessor comes in and pulls off one of the biggest upsets in school history immediately. Like, a fun little hypothetical, 5 minutes left, game's tied, who is Mike Gundy sitting on his couch rooting for?
I mean, I don't pretend to know what's in Mike Gundy's heart and mind when it comes to Oklahoma State. I can only go off what I've seen. And I've seen Thunder players who spent 5 minutes in Oklahoma City spend more time putting out publicly how grateful they were for their time than Mike Gundy ever has since losing his job at Oklahoma State. Is he obligated to? No. Does he owe me that? No. Does he owe the OSU fans that? No. But I think it gleans a little bit of insight into how he feels about being fired. I think all you got to do is go look at all the tweets that Gavin Gundy's probably now deleted, some of which ripped me, which is fine. But he said, quote, Mike Gundy is OSU football. Gavin Gundy didn't pluck that out of thin air. That's something he's probably heard many times from his dad. And for a period of time, that was true. Mike Gundy was OSU. That doesn't mean OSU ceases to exist without Mike Gundy, because that's the attitude I'm sensing from Gavin Gundy and from Mike Gundy's silence. I feel like he might be a little bitter. I don't know. I can only go off what's been put out there publicly, which is another reason for Mike to come out and say, whatever he wants to say about what happened. He's been radio silent. Bill Haston wrote a really good article a few weeks ago. Couldn't get Mike to talk or do an interview. Bill's interviewed the guy more than anyone on planet Earth. And if Bill's not able to get an interview and get him to open up about how he feels, if he felt great and said, hey, I'm rooting for OSU, like, why would he would probably come out and say that, right? So I don't know if he'd be actively pulling against Oklahoma State to answer your question, but I do think there would be a part of him hoping, like, see, I was the missing link. I am OSU football. I hope that's not true, but again, I can only go off the evidence.
I will agree with you that he doesn't, he certainly doesn't owe you or I anything. He doesn't owe talking heads in the media anything at all. I disagree that he doesn't owe the fans anything. I think he owes the fans something, and he hasn't given it to him yet. But at some point, I do think he owes the fans something. Like, there were a lot of people who defended him like he was family through good and bad times for 20 years. And, yeah, so, no, he doesn't owe us anything, but I disagree that he doesn't owe the fan base anything. I think he owes the fan base some sort of statement, some sort of something to acknowledge the 20 years that we all spent together.
That's a fair point. I mean, a lot of dollars, time, effort from the fans to turn that place into one of the toughest places to play, which in turn helped Mike Gundy win a lot of football games. They go hand in hand. So I think that's a fair point on owing the fans something. So I don't know. That's a really good question. And I'm just ready to hear Mike come out and talk about everything. And look, I don't think it's any great secret what Mike should or would likely come out and say. It's like, look, hey, college athletics have changed. This is not the same thing I was doing when I was hired. It's certainly not the same thing when I was winning 10 games every other year. And that's okay. I didn't want to go play golf with big boosters. I didn't want to do this and that. I felt like that wasn't my job. I think he would come out and say all the things that we already know. So I don't really understand why he hasn't, but that's his prerogative.
A couple more thoughts here from YouTube. OSU Wildman says, I'll be at the Houston football game, so I'm guaranteeing a victory in my backyard. I certainly hope you're right. Blake Davison says, if we beat Oregon, I'll shed legitimate tears, like sink to my knees in the middle of Walmart type cry. One just came in from Pooley underscore Joe about Mike Gundy. Says, I defended him for decades, but his ego has made him bitter. It's really sad. Still got love for coach, though. I think that's fair. That's well said. Well, Blake says 13, 15, to 17, we're all de facto Big 12 championship games in Bedlam. Yep, we don't need to go over how those ended. And then OSU Wildman, here's a non-football question. In a way too early women's basketball tourney projection by Charlie Cream, he still has the Cowgirls as a sixth seed. Way too low or reasonable? Way too low. Way too low. Pay attention. Pay attention to what just happened this offseason. A sixth seed? I'm be disappointed if they're a sixth seed, Carson. That's got three seed written all over it. It's hard to crack the top five in women's college basketball. This team has three seed written all over it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And look, that person clearly is just not paying attention. I mean, that's just simple as that. I'm not going to pretend to get upset about a women's basketball poll on July 26th, but I could understand if I was a member of that team, I'd be feeling very slighted. So I can understand that. Let's see here. I think we had a few more. Fire off a few more questions here. We'll keep answering questions, but I did want to get to the golf school goodbye as well. I think Big 12, Oklahoma State put out their Big 12 nominees for Big 12 Athlete of the Year. And, of course, Preston Stout was the men's athlete and a cross-country athlete. I don't have her name pulled up quite yet. Just give me a second. But I think that's the right pick for the men. Preston Stout winning an individual national title. You certainly had the wrestlers as well. Anyone else I'm missing?
Yeah, it wasn't just the individual national title. He won five times. He won the Big 12 championship, and he won the individual national title, and he's played several times professionally. He had a top 15 a few weeks ago at the John Deere Classic. Like, he's, yes, well-deserving. I'm a homer. I think he should get it. I mean, five wins, including a conference and a national championship? That is, dude, that's as good as it gets. And the PGA Tour U-Rankings have come out for the next season. I mean, he's got a massive lead at number one. Like, yeah, Preston Stout's the real deal. I was bummed to see this week in Minnesota, again, Jackson Koivin looks like he's on his way to his first championship, pardon me, PGA Tour victory, which, by the way, Carson, in our one-and-done pool this week, I picked me a little Jackson Kuiven. Me and one other guy who I actually know personally texted me on Thursday morning and said, wow, we gave Kuiven the kiss of death. We both picked him this week, and we were the only ones. But it turns out he's going to win the golf tournament, so I feel pretty good about that. Preston Stout, on the other hand, missed the cut by a shot.
Yep. Kuiven's really good. I mean,
he's so good.
He's so good. I mean,
did you see the shot he hit into 12 yesterday, the three wood that he hit 305 yards?
No, I didn't. I didn't want to be able to watch.
The torque that he put his body through, I mean, I would have to go to the emergency room immediately if I swung that hard. Like, it would make Prime Tiger proud how hard he swung at this three wood yesterday in the middle of 12 fairway and caught it perfect with a 100-foot apex, landed 2 yards short of the green and bounced up to 10 feet, and he kicked it in for eagle on route to a back 928. He's really, really good. And as we saw at Omni La Costa, Stout's not too far behind. Again, Stout missed the cut this week by a shot. Kuiven's having a great weekend. He's probably going to win the tournament. Golf's fickle, man. These two guys are not too far away in skill level. Preston Stout, I wouldn't be shocked if he has another great season next year at Oklahoma State. And then he adds a PGA Tour victory to his mantle in 2027. Like, these guys, they're just that good whenever they come out on tour.
Yeah, I'm fiddling with your settings here. Your audio sounds a little better, so I'm working through some things here. But no, I mean...
Waddle sounds a little bit. Let me hop in here and shout out and show some love to Echo Contracting, our other proud sponsor. Echo Contracting, proud sponsor of the pod, offering electrical contracting services throughout all of Oklahoma. They pride themselves on high-quality professional jobs done right the first time. Call or text for a quote today, 405-279-8444, or email info@echo-contracting.com. Hopefully that came through clearly and not with a big echo. Of course it did it. We'll go to echocontracting.com anyway.
This has been a brutal show. Apologies to everyone involved. Mainly Colby and myself. And particularly the viewers. You guys deserve the most apologies there. My bad. We'll get this figured out for football season, I promise.
We got another question on YouTube asking about Cassidy, Skylar Cassidy, expectations in year one, really wondering about this defense. Carson, expectations for me, don't be a league worst defense. Don't be the 14th best defense in the league. Can we be league average on that side of the ball? You don't have to be Jim Knowles. We don't need Malcolm Rodriguez and Colby Harvell-Peel and Devin Harper and all these guys running around out there. We don't need that. Certainly not in year one. Just don't be the worst in the league. Be a league average defense somewhere from 7 to 10. Like, can we live right there? Because if you can have the 7th to 10th best defense in the league, it's entirely possible that you got the best offense in the league. Certainly, I think a top 3 to 4 offense in the league is very realistic. And if you get a league average defense to go with that offense, why can't you go 6-3 in conference, 7-2 in conference? So, yeah, I think that's the expectation for me. Be a league average middle-of-the-pack defense.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I'm actually really, really bullish on Skylar Cassidy. So if you really dive in to people that covered North Texas and the job he did there, turning them around in 1 year, it's pretty remarkable. A lot of people that covered that team and have covered, you know, college football on the national landscape have had a lot of praise for Cassidy and the job that he did. He brought in a lot of his guys, brought in his leading tackler, etc. And so I think he is of the mold of an Eric Morris. And this is what I think you and I were just talking about till our heads were about to fall off with lack of staff changes is Mike Gundy's staff. And I remember, I think I posted all the years they had been at OSU, decade plus for most of the staff members. And they were all up there in age too. They lacked young innovation with scheming, play calling, coaching, and they lacked hunger. There is a lot to be said about a young, unproven coaching staff full of ass kickers. That's what these guys are. I know people hate when I bring up OU, but it's been my experience covering OU and OSU as a TV person. When OU brought in Bob Stoops, he brought in all late 20s, early 30s guys that just recruited like banshees and brought energy on the sidelines and just completely flipped what was a dead program in that time. I think OSU needs a similar flip, and I think this staff is going to do that, and I think Cassidy is really of that mold too. Young guy, has some family history with OSU as well. That's a little added bonus. He knows the landscape there. And I just think he really knows what he's doing based on the people that, that have way more insight into his past. And he did the same thing. He brought in a lot of the Sam Houston staff to North Texas, flipped that in year one. I expect him to do the same thing here in year one at Oklahoma State. I really do. Now, whether that's middle of the pack or upper echelon, I don't know. But I expect it to be in that range, which I think would be a remarkable turnaround.
Yeah, it would be a remarkable turnaround from where they've been. And people speak very highly of Skylar Cassidy. It's just, you know, there's a level to complementary football. There's a level to having an explosive offense that I think makes it a little harder on the defensive side of the ball. And we've just seen so many times in Oklahoma State, when the offense is good, the defense is not. I'm so programmed to think that way because it is harder to just have really good defensive metrics, really good numbers whenever, you know, your offense scores fast. If Oklahoma State had a game where they put up 500 yards and 50 points, I think it's reasonable to expect that the defense is going to give up 400 yards and 30 points if that's a higher scoring, faster paced game. So those two things go hand in hand, but that doesn't mean that your defense can't be good if you're still doing those things. So I'm absolutely willing to give Skylar Cassidy the benefit of the doubt walking in the door that, like you said, he's a young, hungry, ass kicker type coach who's going to go out and have something to prove. I think that does have some value. I would say with Oklahoma State's defense, I'm in the same place I am with Oklahoma State's men's basketball team. Let's wait and see. Let's wait and see. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But I'm not ready to declare that it's going to be a good defense this season. I'm going to need to see it.
Yeah, I think we need to see it just with 80 new players or whatever it was. I mean, that's just – it's going to be a wait and see. But I really like the things I've heard about Cassidy, and I think he's going to do a good job. And I frankly, I trust Eric Morris. Like, he brought in – like, Eric Morris realizing the job that Cassidy was doing at Sam Houston and just bringing that entire staff to North Texas is brilliant. That's – and it's those types of moves that really make head coaches. Head coaches, sure, they bring in their style of play, their play calling if you're an offensive or defensive guy, sure. It's making shrewd hires along the way. It's recognizing who's having success over here. Could they bring that here? And could we mesh my offense – and mesh it with this defense that's doing very well. And it paid off in spades at North Texas. So I fully expect that to happen. Maybe it doesn't happen in year one, but I fully expect that to happen once this staff gets a year under their belt, at least.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I think we have tackled all of the questions on the YouTube. Carson, anything else? We will, I don't know when we'll be back together. I'll be out of the country for a few days. So sometime middle of next week, we'll get back together and see how things went in Puerto Rico and see what's going on with Oklahoma State. We'll be into August, Carson, so we'll be almost out of the dog days as fall camp will be shortly thereafter.
Well, the people have been begging for me to have Bill Haston back on. Maybe I'll have Bill on.
Oh, okay.
And we can dive more into the Mike Gundy stuff. I do think it's fascinating, right? I mean, he's trying to track him down. I'm curious to get his insight on that, curious to get his insight as well on just the football season that's rapidly approaching. But first, before we say goodbye, this is me right now. It's the tired.
Well, we can kind of see it. Your whole Google search is up. Yeah, there we go. For those of you listening on the audio feed, it's the meme of the tired Popeyes employee bent over, exhausted, clearly having to do way too much work. That's Carson after battling the technology today. Jerry Ross says safe travels. I appreciate that. We will certainly be safe. And it's funny, it's my daughter's first time going to be on a plane. My wife is terrified of flying. So, like, she knows she's going to have to try to keep that in check so that she doesn't pass it on to our daughter. I'm fine flying. I'm like, the bird goes up, it comes down, you know, whatever. But my wife's terrified. My daughter's really excited, so hopefully she does well. She doesn't like loud noises, so I'm curious, once they actually fire that thing up on the runway and we start going, whether she gets terrified and freaks out. But we'll see how it goes. So thank you, J-Rod.
Yep. Enjoy your trip, Colby. That should be a blast. Hope you and the fam have fun. And we'll talk with you after, not this coming week. We'll try to get Bill Haston on, and we'll talk with you once you get back and settled in. So appreciate you joining. Sorry to everyone on the chat. Sorry to everyone listening on audio if it's messed up as well. Clearly, I've got those 6 to 10 plays to figure out before we kick off the season in late August, early September. So I will be grinding away in my own version of fall camp. So bear with me.
All right, Carson, great stuff. Appreciate everyone joining us on a Sunday afternoon on YouTube. If you're listening after the fact, love all of our great listeners. Everybody who's watching, have a great week. Try to stay cool. As always, go Pokes.